You're listening to the Yacht Racing Life podcast, the show for racing sailors everywhere. Featuring exclusive stories and interviews from across the world of competitive sailing. Hosted by British sailing journalist Justin Chisholm. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Yacht Racing Life podcast. We're going to be talking about SailGP in New York, and I'm joined, as ever, by Magnus Wheatley from Cowes in England. Magnus, you were watching, as I was, online. We didn't get to go to New York. What did you think?
Well, once again, Russell, you know, refused to send us tickets, but... it's lovely to have it back after such an enforced break. And I think all credit to the tech teams for what they've done. Don't underestimate how big that task was to get back on the water in New York. I genuinely didn't think New York would happen. I thought it would just go to Portsmouth simply because of logistics to get the wings down to Portsmouth from Southampton rather than across the Atlantic. But they did it, and all credit to them. The weather didn't help. It was lovely to see tidal racing. Really quite enjoyed that. I thought there were some shaky performances. Nobody really mastered the conditions. Lots of results up, down, middle. So it was quite a picky weekend. The first day, very light. I think the LAB foils, light airboard foils, really caught some people out in terms of handling. You saw even Tom Slingsby really struggling with those foils. And I think consistency, as we've heard so many times in every regatta we go to, is the thing that has made the day. And then in the final, the Spanish came out and just put the hammer down. And it was a really good sail. And the Kiwis fluffed their lines. And so did this. And the French were just asleep. So all in all, great to see Spain win it. It could have gone anyway, I think. The crowds, God bless them for standing on Governor's Island in the pouring rain. There were some very clever angle shots by SailGP, and we have to accept that SailGP is a product, but it's a very welcome product at the apex of our sport.
Yeah, I agree. One of the things that I noticed and I was kind of fascinated by was on that first race on the Saturday when the breeze was so light, they were sailing with three people.
Yes,
on the boat. And I think that needs recognizing. Like, I don't think they've ever done that before. And nobody's practiced that. And that just seems like a remarkable feat. I was watching, you know, somebody on like winding on the handles and then reaching back and doing a bit of flight control. It's just, that's amazing, right?
It is. And I think that really caught out a few. And if you look at that first race, you've got Spain, New Zealand and Denmark, first, second, third. I would kind of have expected Australia to be in there. They were in the mix. They were sort of fifth or so in that race. So the real talent and the ones who have spent the most time in the boat know their way around these boats are the guys at the top of the fleet. And that was no surprise. But yeah, it was an odd decision, actually, because I think four would have been fine because they then swapped out to four. And there wasn't really very much more wind. So I'm not sure three is the right way to go on these boats. It's too much for too little people to do.
Yeah, exactly. I thought the Australians, I'm just looking down my list of notes that I made while I was watching, that the Australians, I wrote lackluster. Maybe it wasn't lackluster because they did win two races. So they're clearly not, they're no slouches. But they were so inconsistent. And I did wonder, given all of the fuss of the big takeover by, you know, these two Hollywood actors, Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman, there was a lot of media, a lot of press. I just wonder whether the guys were just totally distracted by that. I mean, it would turn my head for sure.
I think you're really onto something there. And I think we've seen it with other teams, USA, where commercial considerations suddenly get in the way of performance. It's great for, I mean, honestly, the endless stream of unbelievably good news coming out of SailGP is great for sailing. Let's not beat around the bush here. What they're doing is engaging the venture capital community, investment clubs, wealth management, alternative asset investors, big commercial sponsors. This is do you know what? This makes such a difference for if you're doing an Olympic campaign or you're doing a moth campaign and you need to go and talk to a corporate who is now turned on to sailing, it's a much easier sell rather than who the hell are you? What are you doing? So what SailGP is doing is mighty. And I guess it's the same in Formula One where there are sponsor demands and you have to go and do press and you have to go and do things to satisfy those demands. It's not quite there yet, but certainly for Tom, I think this was a very, very big week for them. Not sure how many photo shoots they'll do in their Bonds underpants in the future. They did look a little uncomfortable in that, but all credit to them for doing it. But yes, the results, you know, came out with a fifth, a first, 10th, 11th, and that the 10th and 11th really ended their regatta, and then a fifth, and then a bullet just to remind everybody that they still are very, very good at what they do. Yeah, it's the Slingsby roller coaster. Didn't sound great on board. Didn't sound a happy boat.
Sounded pretty stressed. Bit of bad language flying around.
Bit of bad language. I kind of expect that. I mean, they are mic'd up. If we listen to a footballer or we listen, it's that old Sebastian Vettel defending Lewis Hamilton at a press conference thing. Bad language does come. I would hate anybody to listen to me talking about coming off a start line or missing the first four shifts or whatever. But I think Australia, they're always up there. They're a team that will probably make the final at the end of the season. They are the gold standard by which we all look to, and where is Tom going? What's he doing? Where's he starting? And now that they've got fabulous sponsorship and some really committed investors. Interesting in the press conference, because he was going on about the story. And what Ryan Reynolds did with Wrexham Football Club is a very interesting thing. You know, sell it to Disney Plus, get it onto another level. And this is so in Russell's wheelhouse at the moment of, we're not that concerned about the sailing audience. We're very, very concerned about getting to new audiences and getting out to reaching territories that we've never reached before. It's a huge brand build, and it's remarkable what they're doing. All credit to them. And I think we'll get to Portsmouth and there'll be a whole load more announcements. It seems to be the way that they're going. And I think there's a number of teams, obviously the Italians sold just before this to a consortium, again, famous people, Anne Hathaway involved. And it's really funny how those things come about, because Anne Hathaway probably didn't even know she's invested in SailGP. It's just an alternative that sits on a wealth management manager's book. And you go to a VC or an early stage seed funder and they get you into all of these things. They are looking at it. The investment world is looking at all of those assets as undervalued at the moment. And where could these franchises go to? And if we come back to the American problem, how much to get Taylor Canfield to go away and Deontay Wilder and Lasry and the big investment funds and the McKillens and all these people, how much to get them to go away? I'd suggest it's north of 100 million now. And that's new, absolute. Well, it's a problem to Russell, but it's absolutely music to his ears as well. So they are doing well. The teams and the sailors are doing very well behind the scenes as well as on the water.
All right. I've got some questions about that. I hadn't planned to talk about this, but you've opened up a nice can of worms there. Now, you wrote that you thought American Magic were probably sniffing around the American team. How much substance to that? Is that a Magnus theory, or is there some substance to it?
So there's been a consistent rumor that Magic are looking. I think the way that the team ownerships are structured, even for the owned teams as they were, there's still the league has a share and there's like five shares at the top. Now, if Russell actually recognizes that to build SailGP, you've got three regattas in America, America is the key audience, then he's got to do something about the performance of the USA team. Now, does that mean that Russell engineers somebody like American Magic to come in and buy two shares? Larry buys another two and someone like Mike Buckley stays with one. I don't know, but it's this or the existing consortium end up with one. Somehow that team has got to move and evolve on. Russell can't afford to have the USA team underperforming, not just a little bit, but they're really miles off the pace. I wrote about it saying that it's disheartening for us Corinthians because there's no hope at the top level. These guys really are fantastic. It's like the Swiss turning up in Barcelona with Arno and a group of national level sailors and optimist sailors. You cannot get to the level of Slingsby, Ainsley, the real top guys. And if you look down the fleet here, the Contan Della Pierres, the Diego Botans, they're all going to a whole nother level. So for Taylor Canfield, it's really difficult for the whole enterprise. But it is the model by which Russell wants SailGP teams to operate, with huge sponsors, lots of commitments, lots of off-the-water activity. Be careful what you wish for here, Russell, because Taylor's taken it with Mike Buckley, got some fantastic investors, you know, the Uber founder and early LinkedIn investors and blah, 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 and loads of celebrities. That's great, but if it doesn't translate into performance, then change needs to happen on the boat. And you can't have the kind of Lance Stroll situation where daddy's paying the bills, so you're in the driving seat when there's a better 21-year-old knocking on the door. And there's got to be a bit of recognition there from the Americans of what the league is all about and how your commerciality is actually tied to performance and the performance of the league. So yeah, there's a lot of questions there. I've noticed Russell in the media, online, in writing, is giving the Americans the shortest of short shrifts. He doesn't want to know them, and he wants change. He'll never say it, but he wants change. And I guess behind the scenes there's all sorts of machinations going on. But I think the price tag, if I was Mike Buckley, I'd be sitting there going, yep, you want us gone, no problems at all. How much are you going to pay, and how much is my share worth? And and that's the game now for Russell. He's got a big problem there, and he needs to sort it out by the end of the season.
It's not obvious, though, is it, how the value of these teams is calculated? Because, you know, we're bandying around 100 million, but even at 50 million, which I think, you know, one of the two, maybe the Italian team went for, where is the value in this team? If you did forensic accounting on it, what would you be buying?
It's very clear how Russell, where he was on CNBC and saying that Italy has changed hands for an investment value of 45 million. That does not mean that 45 million big ones has gone left and right here. What it means is that somebody has bought in a potential share of that Italian team that then values the rest of the five shares at a valuation of 45 million. Whether that's true, and you went on the open market and said, hey, I've got an Italian team, who wants to buy it? Very unlikely that anyone's going to cough up 45 million for it. And this comes down to the USA team of the value today of, say, American Mad Doug DeVos buying into USA and buying two shares. The valuation could be 100 million and he pays a higher proportion. Larry comes in and buys them at a lower level. In actual fact, the real value of the team is somewhere, you know, lower than 100 million. But I'm putting that valuation at 100 million because it's the it's the you want us out value.
Yeah.
Okay, then you've got to pay us out. It's I don't think it's worth 100 million. The fair value of a sports team now is probably somewhere between 30 and 40 million. But you could have bought a team for 5 million in season one. You could have bought a season for season two. I think when Ben bought it, it was $12 million. And yeah, there's plenty of play in here. The big problem is USA and the big investors that are behind who are just going to sit there and say, well, you want us out? Well, you've got to pay up big dollars for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll see some more big name investments coming in. I'm not sure how many teams are actually still left, but there's two new teams coming in, and apparently they are going to be fully funded from the get-go. So it'll be interesting to see how all that works. Let's go back to the sailing. Top of my list here, I wrote down Brazil won a race So I think everybody was pleased about that. I think even the other teams were kind of pleased about it. Great to see Martini. She surrounded herself with this super talented team, and it seems to be paying off now. We were talking just before we started, and you said she looks more relaxed when we see her now. And I think that's right, and that's going to deliver dividends out on the race course. But for me, the listening to the comms on the boat, Goody was taking the lead on so much, and it just all sounded like a team that's going to step on from here, and that we'll see them win more races and you know, maybe even make it into a final this season.
I completely agree. I think somebody's got to Martini and just said, look, no one's out to do you down here. I mean, she's always had a very fractious relationship with the media, thinks that everybody's out to get her. That's just not the case at all. And maybe she's had bad experiences, or her family have had bad experiences in the past. She needs to put that behind her, because this is now your time in the spotlight, and we're all kind of behind you, and we all really want you to do well. And I agree with you. When you've got, I thought Lee McMillan was fantastic, by the way. He is really coming out of his shell and proving himself to be a fantastic sailor at the highest level. And listening to the comms with Goody calling in some quite dubious wind calls, I thought, but he's very encouraging to Martini, and he gives that sense of, I mean, I sailed with a guy at the weekend who told us the game plan before the race, and we executed it. And it was a wonderful feeling to be part of that, that it, you just know that the call is right, they're doing the right things, and Goody is, you'd go to war with the guy, wouldn't you? You really would. And Andy Maloney on trim, you're not going to find any better. You just literally, I was in Naples with talking to Grant Dalton about Andy, saying, you know, he could be a helmsman in the America's Cup. He's that good. It's a great team. Pietro Sabello is the coach as well. You know, it's all the ingredients are there. What, just go and put it on the line. And I think it's now about the talent on the wheel to put it on the line, because on those tight racetracks, my goodness, if you get a bad start and you're, as the Brits did all weekend, seemingly, you just get swallowed by the fleet, and you just look like a turkey. No matter who you've got on board, you just can't get through the wing wash, particularly in the light airs.
Yeah, and 12 boats on the race course on a short track like New York. I thought it was too many boats. I thought it just made the racing worse.
I agree.
I mean, I'm not saying they should have less boats, but maybe, you know, you need to recognise that and make the courses a bit longer so you can spread things out a little bit.
I also think with when it's lighter airs, the disadvantage to somebody being in the pack is greater than when it's in heavy airs, and the deltas get longer, and the impossibility of getting through the fleet is raised. So if you didn't get a good start, you're going to be lost, and that's it. And yeah, it's almost impossible to catch up. As you look at the results, you look at Australia getting a 10th and 11th. You look at Canada getting an 11th. You look at GBR getting an 11th and a 10th. Italy, 2/12. It doesn't really feel a fair reflection of where perhaps those teams really are. New Zealand got an 11th as well. It just doesn't feel like those are the teams that should be getting those. And on a light air course with funny old boards, which was a bit curious putting those back on again, but and they were all struggling on those boards. It didn't really work.
Let's talk about the boards in a sec. I wanted to just ask you whether you saw what I thought I saw, which was a bit of a grudge match going on between the Canadians and the British.
Yes.
Neither of them had a stellar regatta, and it just seemed whenever they were in shot, the two of them were having a little niggle at each other, or, you know, kind of splitting the course. That can't be a good idea for either of them, can it?
No, there was a few niggles around the marks as well, where inside, and there were late calls, and there was a protest call that went against the Brits, and Dylan said afterwards, we've reviewed it, we still don't know why we got penalised. Craig Mitchell doesn't make too many mistakes. I've got a lot of time for Craig. I think he does a good job in difficult circumstances, and using the software that he's using. But yes, there was something going on between the Brits and the Canadians. Maybe there's that hangover from Sydney, you know, where Josh should have won it and Dylan got, I don't know. But, you know, I think they're probably all great friends off the water. I thought Giles was, he's looking very thin at the moment. He was in the press conference and I don't know whether he's, you know, training. I mean, maybe he's moth training and trying to get weight down. Because, I mean, he is a very, very big guy. I mean, he's even taller than you, JC. And, yeah, he was looking very fit, I thought. Very, very fit. But wasn't really at the races until right at the end, I didn't think. And, yeah, Canada were a bit anonymous in the whole thing.
Yeah, I agree. On the boards, I think the boards caught a lot of people out. I was really surprised to see them back on. I thought we were done with them. I didn't realise it was a... this was an option and the tefoils were a kind of high wind board. But what's, I guess what we've learned is that, you know, you've got to choose that for a regatta. They don't have time to swap them out, you know, in between days.
The truth may never be known here, but talking to designer friends of mine who are involved in high performance foiling, they all suggest that the tefoils may have been a contributing factor to the increased pressure going up through the wings. I'm not a hydrodynamicist. I'm not a physicist. I'm not. I just see what I see. And they've had nothing but endless trouble since they put those tefoils on. Let's go back to the LABs for New York. It's going to be light and shifty. And right. It'd be really interesting to see if Portsmouth is blowing, I don't know, 12 to 18 knots as it regularly can, which foils they choose. But is this, and no one would really answer the question, and there were no journalists there to ask the question who'd understand it. So I don't know, is this a move that they needed to get through this regatta with very minimal damage? And I'm sure the sailors have been told, look, guys, you know, the league's on the line here. I bet there was a whole load of back and forth of compensation and all sorts going on in between this and this regatta in Rio, the cancelled Rio event. Yeah, there's a lot more going on behind the scenes than the gloss would let us believe.
Yeah, okay, that's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that. Maybe the insurers said, yeah, don't be taking any risks. Put the other boards back on. But it certainly caught a lot of people out. They were hobby horsing around like they did in Auckland, I think it was.
Yeah.
I think those bumpy conditions for these boats are generally tricky anyway.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to see how many people struggled. We talked about the Australians. The Kiwis seemed to get their heads around it pretty well. But they were a little inconsistent too, although they did make it through to the final. I think that's the feeling I'm coming away with from this event is, and I'm even counting the Spanish in this, nobody really, really impressed me in this event.
I agree.
And I think, I mean, maybe it's all a bit of ring rustiness after being away for 12 weeks. It's, you know, these boats are hard to sail at the best of times. When you don't get to do it regularly, I'm sure it is more difficult.
Yes, I think the training time is very limited and coming back in and then suddenly being given a boat with L foils on it rather than the T foils, the flight controllers have then got to get their head around that. Then you're in really puffy conditions where it's one moment it's 12 knots, the next minute it's 6. And you're transitioning a lot from displacement up to foils, not quite sure when to flick the turn wheel to take the lift, what speed do we really need to be going at to get flight, how do we maintain it? And then you see some of the maneuvers were season one maneuvers. They were, we really get to the boundary, we don't, let's just jibe early because we've got some clear water here, so that if we do have a boo-boo, we're okay. So yeah, I agree with you, nobody impressed. I think the Spanish probably impressed the most right at the end, but all the way through, they were. I thought they were relatively anonymous. There's so many anonymous teams. I mean, the Italians, what are you playing at, guys? 12, 12, 8, 7, 8, 9. This is a team that literally has no excuse to lose. What on earth is going on that team? I don't know whether it's a confidence thing. They've got the Pitbull. They've got Philippe Presti. They've got the greatest Luna Rossa sailors on board. They've got Kyle Langford. Ruggie, where are you? They've really got some step-ons to do. And I saw Ruggie's Instagram saying, yes, lots of lessons learned. The typical America's Cup nonsense, you know. Yeah, lots of lessons learned, and we're slowly making. No. You need a rocket up his backside, I think, you know. And this is not acceptable. Finishing 11th, just above the Americans, who were dire. This is not good, particularly for the investors they've got in, particularly for the people that are involved around that team. I don't know what's going on there.
You think there's a communication, a language problem on the boat? I'm not sure how good Kyle's Italian is, and Ruggie's English is okay, but it's not brilliant. In the heat of the moment, I'm sure it all switches to Italian on that boat. So that could be
the problem I have with them is I never really saw them in any heat of any moment. They just seem to be out the back, and one seventh place. They look quite good in the pre-practice. They led a couple of races there, and that was what Ruggie was hanging on to, going, oh yes, we led a race in pre-practice. But guys, you've got to perform, and I'm sure Jimmy will be right on them, and Philippe won't be happy with that result. That's not acceptable for the Italians.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the data has taught all the teams from this event, because it's been such a big change using the big rigs, using the L-shaped boards. And yeah, it's just some weird conditions as well. Mm. Notable moments, we've got to talk about the Kiwis lapping the fleet. I thought that was hilarious. And they went around there so fast that the commentary team didn't really notice that they'd finished the race as well. It's all a bit bizarre.
That was quite a moment for foiling sailing in general. I mean, we see it quite a lot at Moth Fleets. I'm sure we saw it in the America's Cup. There's someone lapped. But yes, that is quite a moment to get away like that. And does it say something about the venue more than anything else? I don't think it says something about the competitors. It really plays back into my narrative of, if in light airs on a very tight course, if you get caught in the wing washed at the back of the fleet, it's really difficult to get going again. If you're clear and free and you can generate your own wind, then things like this happen. And I think there's some things that probably will, but there'll be lessons learnt by the organisers on this one, I think. And New York's always been a dreadful venue for, I sailed there in the early 90s, and I remember doing J24s, and you'd be literally sailing. I mean, they're not quite underneath the skyscrapers, but you'd be literally sailing skyscraper to skyscraper and getting the gaps through. So yeah, it's not the greatest of venues, and it's lovely to have three Grand Prix in America. It really is. It's great to go coast to coast, as it were, and spread the message. I get why they're doing it. It's a terrific backdrop, particularly when it's sunny, but it's a terrific backdrop. But doesn't really work from a sailing point of view. Tidal, no wind, you know.
Yeah, but I think this goes back to your point about what Russell's trying to achieve here. I think New York commercially is just so absolutely key for them that they're always going to go back there. That, you know, the America's Cup went there and had a terrible, terrible event.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they learned some lessons because they didn't use that particular piece of water to race on again.
Yeah.
But it isn't a lot. It isn't a lot better now.
I'll say just one thing on the commercial side of it. So when I was in New York quite recently, I went to the New York Yacht Club, and I was staying in a hotel around the corner, and we went to a sports bar. And there, amongst all the sort of the college basketball and NBA, NFL, all the stuff that was going on, there were four screens that had SailGP on. And this is a midtown bar. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. Mm. And there were genuinely people, and I was sitting there watching that because I had no interest in basketball or any other sports in America. And I was watching it, and people were coming up to me saying, oh, do you know what's going on here? And there is a general desire to see not just sailing, it's just any sport, if it's golf, if it's anything. And that's what Russell's tapping into. It's a clever move to do this, because there is a desire, in the UK as well, to see any kind of like commercial top sport. I look at Formula One, it's pretty dull, actually. I have a Sky subscription because of Formula One, and it's it yeah, some races are okay, a lot are bad. And I think if we look at this as a how many race league is it, 16 race league or whatever, 12 race league, they're doing a great job with it. And it is now a sports property that is highly sellable.
Yeah, yeah. The danger is that the sailing fans are going to be the poor relation in all of this at some stage. It's probably already happening now. Oh, I don't want a reaction from that because that's just my view. On the plus side, from a sailing fan's perspective, 5 race winners. Is it 5 over the weekend? Yeah, because the Australians won 2.
France, Australia, Spain, New Zealand.
Yeah, it's pretty.
And Brazil.
And Brazil, yeah. You know, that's good. You know, I remember early seasons watching it was always the Australians or the Japanese, you know, they'd always win and it was all a bit predictable. So there is some interest in watching these events now. And I kind of enjoy it from that point of view, you know, a great deal.
I enjoy all the pre stuff. I think, you know, hearing all these incredible investors coming out and the relentless stream of good news, it's great for our sport. It's wonderful to hear that there is this going on and that there are people really taking this much interest in our sport, which is brilliant. And it will, the pyramid trickle down effect will happen because of it. And if you're doing a Vendée campaign or you're doing an old team, or I spoke to Stefan Kandler in Naples and we were talking about sponsorship for the America's Cup, and he's saying, we just rolled on from the last America's Cup straight into SailGP, and now we can roll straight back into this. Now that we have surety, we can talk to our sponsors and our partners and new partners. And so it's a continual dialogue. And I think the more superstars that you get into this, you get Kylian Mbappe, Deontay Wilder, you get DeAndre Hopkins, or whatever the people that you know, the American sports bar, Ryan Reynolds, you know, movie stars getting involved, Anne Hathaway, people like that. It does create a buzz. It does. There is something going on here, and we're silly to knock it because it's absolutely.
And you're right. And I noticed in the mainstream media there was an onslaught of, you know, articles in Rob Report and you know, Time Magazine and all this sort of stuff. Mm. So they've been on a massive offensive with these journalists. And you're right. You can quantify that, you can measure that, and there is a value to that.
Yes.
And that all goes into the pitch deck when they're trying to sell SailGP to people.
So absolutely.
I absolutely get it. I want to just close this episode down with a question for you. We kind of straddle the SailGP and America's Cup worlds. And I was watching the Spanish and I'm thinking, well, they won the last season in SailGP. They've won 2 events back-to-back this time. They've always been in the top bunch this season. They're pretty bloody impressive, I think. And I thought, is this an opportunity, given the possible new nationality rules, that these guys are going to get picked up by an America's Cup team?
Well, Diego Botan is part of the Santander family. So, you know, he knows the phone calls to make if ever it was going to happen. Problem with the cup is you've really got to do 2 or 3 and get all the data and the IP in the team as well as the actual computer data. So it's a lot of money now to do that. Yeah, I look at Spain and I just went back over my notes. I keep all the crew lists of every regatta and they have stayed remarkably cohesive. Same with the Kiwis, pretty much same with the Aussies. The really big teams are working really well effectively together, and they all have off-water performance analysts. They're all looking at the data and they're then executing. And Diego, I think is a real talent that is a quiet talent, and the way they celebrated afterwards was quite measured, and it's just a process, it's another regatta. They celebrated well, but they didn't go over the top. It's almost kind of expected. And going into that final race, I was cheering for the French. I thought Contant and Kevin had a superb regatta, and they ended up top of the fleet races, and I thought, this is the moment with Madame Bettencourt's L'Oreal and Kylian Mbappe's foundation a core group and everybody else around it. I thought this is the moment. This is, they're going to win in New York, and that'll be a big, big win. And I even predicted it before. I said, expect the French to have a good weekend. I think the French are going to be, within one season, are going to be winning regularly here. I think they're going to be really untouchable. Contain has got a very good attitude about himself. But Diego, you know, it's Diego versus Contain for the titles, really, going forward. And Slingers is getting older. Pete Burling is getting older. There's no battling Father Time here. These are the new superstars of world sailing. And yeah, so it does translate up to America's Cup. For sure, the teams, you know, some of the teams on the sidelines at the moment will be looking at these guys saying, this is where the talent is.
Yeah. And with Diego and Florian, I wasn't so much thinking of a Spanish team as, you know, maybe one of the existing teams would be able to bring them in, because they didn't do the last America's Cup.
You've got Joel Rodriguez as the flight controller. Yeah, they're kind of under the radar. Their superstardom has yet to be found. Even though they won, even though they're the last season's winners, the individual superstardom is yet to be found. Diego is quite quiet individual and quite measured, and doesn't quite have the Slingsby or the Burling or the Giles Scott or even the Dylan Fletcher kind of about him. He's just a quiet individual going about his business and sailing out of his skin. He's a bloody good sailor.
All right, final question for you. You're allowed to bet on Sail GP now. Not sure I completely approve of that, given the problems the world has with gambling. But if you were going to place a bet, I'm not recommending anybody does, but if you were going to place a bet at this stage in the season, which team is going to win the grand final?
Crikey, Justin, thank you for that one. I will say, New Zealand.
All right. I will say France. I think France are going to run under the radar for the rest of the season. They'll be there or thereabouts. They won't have all the pressure of the Spanish who've won two events now. So if they don't win the next event, then they're in a massive decline. And yeah, I think the French, but I wouldn't bet against your Kiwi vote.
I think my reason behind the Kiwis is that now that the America's Cup has been lifted off Pete, I sort of sensed in his voice there was definitely some weight off his shoulders, but there's a point to prove here. And I thought he was sailing pretty well with Blair, and they are still the gold standard by, as a duo. They've got to sort Leo Takahashi out. And I think if Andy Maloney had been on the boat on that last rounding, I think that would have been a different outcome. So once they can sort that out, I think they'll just get better and better and better. And now that we've got quickfire Grand Prix coming, I think you'll see the Kiwis pushing on.
All right. Well, let's close it down at that. Thanks, Magnus, for your time.
Thanks,
as
Jesse.
Always. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back after the Portsmouth event.
That's it for this episode of the Yacht Racing Life podcast. We will be back soon with another top name interview. But in the meantime, check out yachtracinglife.com for more great content from across the sailing world.